Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in. It's Wednesday. It's the day before Turkey Day. Happy Thanksgiving to one and all. Colton Stone, action hero, producing and engineering. Chris Schmidt, great to be with you with Hail Varsity Radio. Can tap the line 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865, and give us a shout if you like, if you're getting packed up, you're off to the in-laws, off to mom and dad's, off to grandma and grandpa's, or you're hosting. Roll up them sleeves. Full day of football tomorrow. The Fighting Jeremiah Searles are in action against Detroit and Amir, so that'll be all good. I hope you have a great football weekend and time with family. We are loaded up today. You can find us on Twitter at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, or on the email, chris@hailvarsity.com. We'll get to the Twitter poll question that's a food poll in a moment. And on the show here in 15 minutes, Brandon Vogel of hailvarsity.com and magazine. Vogues will join us. Mike Shewhart, Shuey, going to be with us. And going to be an awesome day for golf tomorrow. Don't think they're open. I know the Thanksgiving Day brunch feast is in full effect at Wilderness Ridge. So there is that for you tomorrow. I meant the golf not being open. And Friday, before the old kickoff at 3, if it's going to be 60 and awesome, I would not put the putter away. So Shuey will be in with Wilderness Ridge Golf and Husker Golf in 30 minutes. Brad Edwards of ESPN in 1 hour. And it's a Barney Wednesday. Coach Gary Barnett joins us in hour two. Got the phone number, got the email, have the Twitter account. So we'll get into what you would punt on Thanksgiving. First and foremost, and Jacob Padilla of Hail Varsity going Terminator could do without any of that. Don't eat the bottom two. The top two are just okay. So you can jump on Schmidt underscore radio on Twitter, put a vote in, and I'll check this out tomorrow as I'm pouring another bourbon with us hosting tomorrow. Cranberries or cranberry sauce is leading the way a wide margin. Stuffing, and I just call it, you know, stovetop stuffing. I'm not super creative. Green bean casserole is undefeated. It's awesome. It's Junior's favorite. It's so good. And then I'm the only one tomorrow that likes pecan pie, so of course I don't get pecan pie. If my folks are in town, they'll have it. If my grandparents out in McCook, they'll have it. But otherwise, I'm, you know what, out of luck with pecan pie tomorrow. So there we go. Colton, you've looked at this and you've given me the old John Belushi rolling eyebrow from one side to the other on green bean casserole.
Yeah, no, that's green bean casserole is getting a moonshot into the backyard.
Okay, fine. So that's what
but
you
pecan
would
pecan pie is
that's undefeated.
That's a must.
It is, right?
Personally.
Okay.
I'm not a huge fan of the cranberries, but it's all right.
See, and I don't make, we don't make our own.
That might
be. We'll buy the old Ocean Spray, little jelly kind. You know what I'm saying? They come out of a can. I know that's weak and unimaginative. We'll talk some food with Vogel, too. But I like that. It's good. It's the fruit roll-up taste that doesn't stick to the top of your mouth. All right? Where is Chip Kelly spending Thanksgiving? Huh? Is he still out in La La Land? Is he back home in New Hampshire? Is he in Bristol? I think he's probably in Bristol because it is rivalry week. And good stuff from George Schroeder, friend of the show. And USA Today. Let's start off with Chip Kelly news, and let's talk Nebraska and Chip Kelly. I am not teasing you on purpose. There's nothing to tease. Okay, the hottest coaching candidate alive, not named Scott Frost, suited by Florida. You know this. Suited by UCLA. You know this. But you just had heard Tennessee's name associated to Chip Kelly. I think Barstool Huskers put this best. Chip, we don't want you. You're just the side chick. So, listen, Tennessee, Florida, UCLA, $6 million is in play, according to George Schroeder. And you know, we won't know. And this came out, I think, from Schlabaugh today on ESPN. And I do advise you to go to HailVarsity.com, be a member and a subscriber with us on Hail Varsity. Incredible coverage of the silly season, of the coaching carousel, not just the latest and greatest on Scott Frost, but also some great inside info on Chip Kelly. And you can find that on HailVarsity.com. But what you have right now is a two-horse race for Chip Kelly. And do you believe that the apparel company Under Armour is a sticking point for Chip Kelly? That's what's been assumed. That's what's been inferred in George's story today on USA Today and the relationship that Chip had with Phil. I always heard, and again, hearsay, or you heard from a guy who knows a guy that covers Oregon, that Chip was tired of Uncle Phil and that they had a falling out when Chip wanted to go to Tampa. Well, Chip's last season, he turned Tampa down. Shiano got it, and Chip Kelly was there for one more year. Then he jumped. Then he left for Philly. Why is that? Well, he wanted to see if that offense could work in the NFL. The other reason being, maybe it was just time to get away from a booster that helped make you great, but maybe it was just time to get away from the headache. So, and I don't know if Under Armour would operate that same way, but I don't know if all of a sudden going to an Under Armour school or an Adidas school would be pulling a Fredo Corleone here on Phil Knight, if that's truly a sticking point. I think the sticking point with UCLA is they've been average to bad as often or more so than they've been good. And all they've done is off people as coach since Terry Donahue. And Terry Donahue never got it done despite a ton of talent out there. And you've never seen, I shouldn't say never, you have to go back to Aikman's senior year with USC and Rodney Pete, but you can count on one hand the number of times SC and UCLA have been good in the same year. It's usually one or the other. So it's UCLA is leverage. Florida's the landing spot. Does that number grow beyond $6 million? A&M going to pop Kevin Sumlin after the LSU game. Does A&M get into this race? I don't think so. I think A&M's late to the party. They'll go somewhere else. But there's also some assertion in this write-up with George Schroeder that, hey, wait a minute on Arizona State. It's a Colton Stone favorite. Arizona State, would Chip Kelly go to Arizona State? Listen, I know the math is supposed to add up for the Pac-12 here. And Chip Kelly and familiarity, I think the talent pool, while crowded in the SEC in Florida, is still much, much more of a draw than going back to the Pac-12 where they know you. And they know how to theoretically adjust to you. The SEC has not seen anything that you've done, just in bowl games occasionally. So I think this is leverage being used. The listening to UCLA, Florida is where he'll end up. Now on to Nebraska. The other thing here is with Chip Kelly, and we spent the last couple days on Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly gets a $5 million bonus. I think either Schefter or Schlabaugh reported this, somebody from ESPN. $5 million bonus kicks in from the 49ers if Chip Kelly waits till the end of the college football regular season to take a head job in college. So this will be beyond Sunday. So Nebraska, Arkansas, A&M jobs expected to open. So here's the question for you when it comes to the Nebraska thought here. In Chip Kelly's kind of blackjack game here, You wonder, did Nebraska offer? Well, in Schroeder's story, it didn't say Nebraska offered Chip Kelly. It says that offers have been made by UCLA, by Florida, and he rejected an offer from Tennessee. Okay? There was interest from Nebraska. Do you believe that there was interest from Nebraska? And the whole world, pick a school, pick a conference, pick a fan base. Yeah, yes, you're interested in Chip Kelly if he's available. Yes, you're interested in a 46-7 record in four straight BCS appearances and a college football playoff appearance that he doesn't get credit for, but that was his team. You play for a national championship against Auburn. You revolutionized college football. I mean, you had Urban spread, and then here comes Chip Kelly, the OC from New Hampshire that lands in Oregon, goes from, you know, the Joey Harrington era to, my God, they've got this Masoli guy at quarterback, and this Mariota is your quarterback, and you even watch him in the NFL, and you're like, man, that dude's awesome. And I know he could be better in the NFL, but in college, he was phenomenal. And he wasn't a run-first guy in the offense, but he could totally be run-first if they wanted to. He's 6'4 and 4'5", 40. So with Nebraska, what do you believe? Do you believe Nebraska and Bill Moose reached out to Chip Kelly? I believe this. I believe with the relationship and the crossover time at Oregon and Bill Moose and Bill Moose's comments on an offense like Chip Kelly has run, a quarterback run option element to it, a offense that Scott Frost has merged with Tom Osborne, option football and principles. That's the offense that Bill Moose wants and is probably pretty high on. I think there is probably some sort of feeler out there to Chip's agent. Hey, is it worth our time to make a phone call? Is it worth our time to pursue Chip Kelly? Thanks for listening. We'll wait to hear from you. That's my thought. And there was no response. I don't believe there was a response. I think Chip Kelly, once this thing heated up, once some of these primo jobs opened up, kind of had his name circled and associated with some areas with an insane amount of talent. He's already done the Oregon thing where you have to recruit nationally. He despises recruiting, but you have to recruit nationally, and you got to find a niche. That niche was Nike. That niche was wardrobes. That niche was hyper Millennium Falcon, let's jump to light speed type speed and tempo on offense. The place that hasn't seen it run ever, and you don't know how to react to it, when you factor in his ability to get defensive linemen in SEC area codes, is the Oregon offense with a stud defensive line, with a defense that can back up and play any style of offense, and you're not getting more than 3 or 4 yards if you're trying to ground and pound it. And I think that's the element missing from Chip. On the defensive side, you get the skill athletes around where he's from and going to be in Gainesville if he takes that job. Good night. He'll set the SEC on fire. He'll be fine. But when it comes to Nebraska, I think there maybe was one of those little head nods, hey, how are you? Sending a drink to a beautiful woman at the bar. She may have rejected the drink. That's my read on Nebraska and Chip Kelly. And my read on this is Chip Kelly knows Scott, loves Scott, tutored Scott, mentored Scott. And he knows that this might be Scott's deal here at Nebraska to go home and thrive and build a program under the Osborne and Kelly influence when it comes to offensive football. Good story from George Schroeder. Florida, I think we'll get their man. UCLA, thanks for sweetening the pot. I don't know where A&M goes. Maybe they look SMU. And if Sumlin is out, I make a quick phone call if I'm UCLA, because I think Sumlin and UCLA would rock. I think they would be a lot of fun together. think they'd be in an incredible time. Arizona State, just, I don't know, keep wishing for 7-5 and beautiful women and being good once in a while. That's Rich Rod State for football. Sorry, Colton. Rich Rod's going to get a stud quarterback in every 2 years, and he'll save himself. You can join us, 466-377-6800-825-5865. Tap the line, Shillingbridge, Cork, and Tap House. What do you believe with Chip Kelly in Nebraska? Was it ever a thing? Was it something that you wish was more of a thing? We're always talking about, okay, if it's not Scott, who's next then? Well, I think you settled on Scott over Chip just because you know you could get Scott, a better chance of getting Scott. Central Florida, man, they're giving a contract extension, a 5-year extension to their athletic director, White. And what type of tea leaves do you read for that? Well, if you're Central Florida, you can't lose the best coach you've ever had there and the AD who brought in the best coach you ever had there in the same season. And you got to figure out which one you can extend and pay and which one's more likely to stay. Now, it's the AD. We'll see where Frosty ends up, when Frosty ends up. Brandon Vogel's going to join us. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
When you get time and you're bumping around, go see Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman, 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln Rod West. In Grand Island, 0% interest financing through 2020. Great selection of Earth Mind and Pure Grown Diamonds. And 1-carat diamonds available for you to give to her this holiday season. $99 down, $99 a month. That is a winner right there. Can log on SauterHeyman.com. And for sure, go see Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman. Again, 12th and O downtown Lincoln. Plenty of time to do that before kickoff Friday. South Point Pavilion on Black Friday and out west in Grand Island. We bring in he's an All-American in the kitchen, and he's All-Pro / Hall of Fame when it comes to coverage of Nebraska football and excellence. It is, you know what, great to catch up with Brandon Vogel at HailVarsity.com and magazine at Brandon L. Vogel. You read his hot reads every morning. Vogues, we just spent some time talking about Chip Kelly, and Chip's the pretty gal, and everyone's chasing him. And he said no to some folks. There's some old fashions that Don Draper never turned down, sent his way, and he said, no, I'm good. I'm okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm ready tomorrow when it comes my turn to explain what I'm thankful for, to say I'm thankful for Chip Kelly finally making a decision, whenever that may be, so we can start sorting out the rest of all this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if we go around the old Schmidt household, and is it wrong for me to say I'm thankful for 3 o'clock because that's when you're all leaving?
Yeah.
I mean, Chip kind of did that to Tennessee, right?
he did do that. You know, the holiday season brings a lot of things. It may not bring the time for brutal honesty. So my professional advice is maybe avoid that one, Chris.
Well, let's get into some brutal honesty. What do you believe about Nebraska per George Schroeder's story in USA Today? George has covered college football forever. Good dude, friend of the show. You know, my take on it is, it's not that Chip wasn't on Nebraska's radar. Chip's on everyone's radar. I just don't know that his agent picked up the phone to listen. Even if it was a, hey, how are you? That's maybe as serious as it got. Again, total speculation. What do you think? What do you think Nebraska, was there a Nebraska in Chip Kelly at all?
Well, you know, and I've written this, I think for any sort of Power Five school that has any sort of clout at all, historically, traditionally, however you want to define it, I think if you're in the market, you have to at least place the call and say, hey, Chip Kelly, just we'd love to sit down and talk if you're interested, because there's so few absolutely proven options out there, and I think Kelly's about as close as you can come in this current. From the coaches that we know that are out there now, or could potentially be lured away, his years at Oregon are kind of as good as it gets. I wouldn't be surprised if Nebraska at least reached out, and I'm not surprised that if he wasn't totally interested. You know, that part of it doesn't surprise me that much. If you think Nebraska sort of has the pull to immediately enter races like that, well, congratulations, you may have missed the last 15 years, which is probably better for you. Everything with that, well, I don't know if any of it is particularly true. It would all make sense if it were.
Can you just show up to the race? Hey, I heard this was going on. I mean, because it sounds like A&M showing up to the race super late, shoes are untied.
It does, and, you know, look, Kelly would be – we asked people on the board today sort of rank that higher. Wherever Chip Kelly goes, if you think it's A&M, Florida, UCLA, like, scale 1 to 5, what do you think it is? I said it's a 4, just because, like I said, there's not Urban Meyer to Ohio State potential out there. So it's kind of about – as close as you can get is to a home run higher, I think, before you start factoring in all the different things like fit and staff and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, again, A&M sort of in the same boat as everybody else. Well, if we're going to do this, we better at least call Chip Kelly and make him tell us no first.
Or at least get an answer from him. Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com, and magazine is in. Yes, we can pursue further chats. No, we can't. If you're to put... Well, let's use Colton's money so you and I aren't out any. If you were to put a bet down of a grand, are you betting on Florida or are you betting on UCLA?
Florida. I think, well, it's a better job. UCLA is a solid program. It's sort of the tier two of great football programs out there in that. And it's got a national title, but the sustained periods of being a top five program just aren't really there. It's the sort of place where the fan support's going to come and go a little bit, depending on how good you are. And that's just based on, you know, kind of being in LA, I think, and there being so many other options, and also sort of pockets of the South and the Midwest are where you get really diehard college football fans, the sort of people who are tracking flights and everything else. Not that UCLA doesn't have some of those people, but it's not all of those people. And I think that's the key difference. You're set up pretty well in the SEC East, although the Pac-12 South isn't that bad either. I get the sense that Kelly, who's a pretty smart and calculating guy, sees the advantages that we all seem to see with Florida.
Do you have a sway right now on Scott Frost and timeline? And if it's going to be a yes or a no, if you had to project the day before Turkey Day, I just asked you about Chip Kelly, and we're both in agreement that Florida's where he likely ends up. What about Frosty? You've got an extension that's just been handed out to Mr. White, Central Florida. Do you read into that at all?
No. I mean, I think UCF's doing everything it can to keep a coach that I think a lot of people see a great deal of promise in. So none of that's surprising. They've got to do what they can. And hey, AD Danny White is a good up and coming athletic director. So even if he has to go find a football coach here pretty soon, he's a guy you want to keep around anyway. So it serves two purposes there. If that helps land Scott Frost or keep Scott Frost there, I mean, great. If not, you're still left with a pretty good AD. I do think if Frost chooses to leave, Florida was probably Nebraska's top competitor for him. And if they end up with Kelly, that certainly would help things if that's the direction Nebraska wanted to go. So I'd probably put it about 55 or 60% that if Frost were to leave, Nebraska would be his destination.
I'm going to throw a monkey wrench into this. Say craziness happens and say Jimbo goes to Aggieville. Say Florida State's open. And say Mr. Taggart wants to get back to SEC country. How bad an arm wrestling match is Oregon v. Nebraska for Scott Frost?
That one would be pretty tough. Nebraska obviously has the pull of being home for Scott, but he's been at Oregon. He's coached at Oregon and relatively recently. So he's seen what that looks like when it's running at its sort of optimal level and being a coach in that system, what that requires and what that looks like. He knows what it's like at Nebraska as a player, but that's different from a different era. So that one would be pretty tough. It's part of why this Kelly domino is such a key one to fall, because I could see Taggart getting a really long look at Florida. I don't know if I see it as much at Florida State.
Okay.
The Seminoles are just at a different level than Florida is. The Gators are a little bit more desperate, I think, just given their recent history. I mean, it's not that long ago that Meyer was winning titles there, but you've gone through a couple of coaches since then, and it hasn't quite worked out. So I would have a hard time seeing Taggart being high on the Seminoles list. So again, if Frost to Nebraska is something the Husker fans want, root for Chip Kelly to go to Florida. I think that's a big one.
Vogue's got about 2 minutes here. Your thoughts on Friday when it comes to Mike Riley and how things will be addressed and handled, win or lose? I mean, from a timeline of news, what's your gut feel say?
Yeah, I guess I would be surprised if there were, well, maybe surprised isn't the right word. I'd be mildly surprised if something were to be released in terms of a decision right after the game. I could see it happening on Saturday or Sunday would probably be more likely to me, but it's not a huge gap there. I'd say probably, 55-60% again, that maybe something happens over the weekend versus Friday. So I kind of think Nebraska will get a chance to play out its season. I think they have a chance to kind of put everything aside and play pretty well, actually. And beyond that, then we'll start worrying about 2018 and beyond for Nebraska football.
Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Vogues, we'll run you down for the forecast on Black Friday as we're live at Miller Time Pub. Got about a minute here. So tell me about Turkey Day dinner tomorrow, the brine you're rocking for your bird.
Yeah, it's always a good idea, in my opinion, to do some sort of brine, and it doesn't have to be very, very fancy. Basically, sugar and salt and kind of whatever you've got on the spice rack. So I threw some candied ginger in there and some cloves. But it'll help with flavor your turkey eventually. That's really all I'm in charge of is the turkey and then the resulting gravy from having cooked the turkey. So I got it pretty easy. We're going over to a friend's house, be just a small group of people, so it'll probably be pretty low key overall for me, which is good.
You're going to punt one of the following, which is it? It's the old Twitter poll, Schmidt_radio, cranberries/sauce, stuffing, green bean casserole, pecan pie. You have to get rid of one.
The cranberries. I will eat them, particularly if it's not the gelatin out of the can. I'll be even more interested, but that was pretty easy for me. Okay. Cranberries can go.
Okay. No soup for you, says Vogues on the cranberries. Vogues, you're awesome. Have a great time with friends and family, and a happy Thanksgiving to you, bud.
All right. You too. Thanks.
There he is, Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Great news and insight on the coaching carousel for Nebraska and others on HailVarsity.com. Mike Shewhart, Shuey's next.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
You know what else is awesome? 60s in November in an afternoon kickoff, which means it's time to golf Friday morning. at Wilderness Ridge or Friday afternoon at Wilderness Ridge, wildernessridgegolf.com, where you log on 402-434-5106 to make that tee time. Make the phone call. Go see Director of Golf Chris Thompson, and for sure see your dear friend Mike Shuhart, Director of Instruction, not only for fall golf, but for winter help, for spring help, for summer success. Mike Shuhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf, Husker Golf. Shuey, happy Thanksgiving.
You also, man. It's hard to believe it's Thanksgiving already.
You blink and it's here, and thank you. I'm going to give you the credit for 60-degree Black Friday.
How about that?
That's crazy. Good.
That's awesome.
That's a lot of goodness there. So you're a Nebraska dude. You love Nebraska football.
Oh, yeah.
So this time of year, is it always – we spent time talking Iowa, Nebraska, and it's grown on me and it's grown on the fan base because it's going to be taken away here in a couple years. So you're just now you're like, wait a minute. But did you live and die with Oklahoma football and Nebraska football after Thanksgiving?
Always, man. Sitting on the couch with my dad and watching that game and some of the things.
Did you cry ever?
Keith Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The first time that. I heard a certain letter from my father that day.
Yeah. That happened in our house, too, I think.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that.
And it's not just Barry Switzer, it's blank Barry Switzer. Barry Switzer.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I got to ask you here. If you had to punt, or we'll call it mulligan, if you had to take away one of the following for Thanksgiving dinner.
Ooh.
Is it the cranberry sauce, stuffing, green bean casserole, pecan pie? Which one's got to go?
Cranberry.
See, that's like it's winning almost 60% of the vote here.
Well, the other ones you have to have, right?
Well, but, I mean, Colton and I are very fond of pecan pie. I've been overruled when we host Thanksgiving. I don't get pecan pie.
I'm not a pecan pie guy.
You just haven't had the right pecan pie.
I guess not. But
you're just like, the look on Chewy's face right here. Like,
No, I'm not a pecan pie guy. I could get rid of that one too.
Okay. Traitor. green bean casserole. Love that.
Yeah, that's kind of hit or miss. It's just,
depending on who's making it.
Exactly. That's either really good or really bad. There's kind of no in between.
I won't follow up on oh, really win. And then stuffing, I mean, I get it. It's all good.
Stuffing's good.
Stuffing's really good.
I make my own.
Yeah. How do you do it? We'll get into golf here, I promise.
Sausage cornbread stuffing.
Really?
Yeah.
Where do you live at again?
I'm actually making some tonight when I get home.
Yeah. I'll be over. Shuey Tiger gets rolling, but also some news on some Nebraska guys you can share.
Yeah, pretty cool. Brady Schnell, young man from Omaha. He played at Nebraska. He just won the Argentine Open.
Sweet.
And with that win, he got an exemption into next year's British Open at Carnoustie. So pretty exciting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Then another local guy, Brandon Crick, who's from McCook. He played 2 years college golf at Gonzaga. Then he transferred back and played his last 2 years at Nebraska. He made it to the finals of the qualifying school.
Oh, wow.
Which will be that first week in December. So he'll be down there playing with a chance to earn his PGA Tour card. I think Brady will be there, too.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, I mean, it's got some local flavor out there getting ready to try to work their way to the big show.
No, that is good, man. That's so good to hear. This time of year, when you were on tour, what were you doing? Where were you at to kind of keep honing your game? How do guys approach, and I've always wanted to ask pro athletes, but a lot of times this time of year, pro athletes are have the face mask on or have the basketball in hand or they're doing winter ball somewhere. So I got to ask you where do PGA folks winter ball, so to speak? Where do you kind of keep tuned in? Obviously, folks will see you at Wilderness here to keep up. But when a guy's getting on tour or has a chance to get that card, how are they spending the air quote off season?
Yeah, a lot of them go. Like Arizona,
sure.
Florida, places that the weather's just a little bit better. Mm-hmm. I mean, I stayed around here quite a bit, though. I mean, it was.
Did you really? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I needed the downtime, because like I said, the qualifying school, the finals of the qualifying school is actually that first week in December. So I'm still finishing season, grinding, still preparing for that, And then once you're done with qualifying school, then you had a couple, 3 weeks off, between the end of qualifying school and then probably the first of the year. That was your downtime. At least that was my downtime. You had Christmas in there, and that was kind of a 3 week, maybe four at the most, that downtime away from golf. And then, man, after the first of the year, I mean, the Hawaiian Open, you know, the tournament over in Kapalua is the first tournament of the year. That starts that first week.
That doesn't suck to go.
No. That's pretty nice, but it's never bad to go to Hawaii.
No, I'll take your word for it.
You know, so you're back at it, you know, starting the grind all over again. So, you know, I use that time just to get away from it and not really do much.
Okay.
You know, but, just like it's going to be this week, I mean, you had days, you have a lot of nice days in there. So, you get to still go out and take advantage of those days.
So, from an intensity level, when you talk about your grind, give me a number on a scale of 1 to 10, what your grind level and, like, laser focus was like. Because it sounds to me like you got a little Saban in you with just your intensity. And that's a compliment to you.
Thanks.
And I mean that with just always doing the process.
Yeah, that's how I was. I mean, because I was focused on getting to where I wanted to get, you know. Mm-hmm. And I kind of figured out and some of the things I needed to do. I would look at myself, you know, being around some of my friends that I've been involved with playing the game. I would consider myself lucky because I like to practice. I mean, it's kind of my sanctuary, I guess. Mm-hmm. I like to go out and practice for long periods of time. But it wasn't work, man. It was fun. I mean, I enjoyed it because I felt like I was getting better and I needed to, and I felt like I was getting closer to where it is that I wanted to be, and it's what I needed to do to get where I wanted to be. So it wasn't really work and grinding to me. It was kind of
fun. Mental focus and your carryover to the tournaments, I think, was pretty intense, correct?
Yeah, I was pretty intense out there. Yeah. Pretty intense. Sometimes I needed to kick back a little bit, but no, I was pretty intense most of the time.
Good, man. I mean, if it works for you, it works for you.
And I'm going to look back and go, it's what got me where I was,
sure.
You know? I don't think if I would have done it any other way, I probably would have gotten there, mm-hmm. You know? So it's just a matter of everybody's different. I got guys that don't practice at all that are really great players that get and are very successful.
It's just flip the switch.
Yeah, it's just who they are, you know? It's what makes them go. Some guys can't grind that much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get bored, they lose their focus, they get sloppy.
It's almost worse for them.
Yeah. You know, so it's like everybody's got to kind of know their own style.
Well, as
and
a coach,
works.
Too, it's got to be important to figure out that personality.
It is. I need to keep working on that, too, because I push sometimes harder than I need to push, you know. But that's all. That's what I know. So I'm going to keep pushing because it's what I do.
And it's worked.
You know, so, but it's not, again, it's not for everybody. So you got to learn that fine line between what's pushing too hard and what's pushing the right amount.
Mike Shewhart is here, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, a few more minutes with Shuey. Brad Edwards, 15 minutes away, college football playoff thought, Nebraska thoughts, Chip Kelly thoughts from Brad. And then it's a Barney Wednesday, since it's Turkey Day tomorrow. Gary Barnett going to be with us at 5:25. Black Friday only, Wilderness Ridge, give the gift of golf this holiday season. Stop by the golf shop, tell you what, you can purchase a certificate that includes golf for four. Great deals, great specials, Black Friday at Wilderness Ridge.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Winding down hour one. Hope you're all right. Great to be with you. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Shuey is awesome. Wilderness Ridge, phenomenal. Of course, hope you got that reservation in for the Thanksgiving Day feast at Wilderness Ridge. If you didn't, I'm not going to shake my finger at you. It's okay. But you're going to be like, it could be like Griswold in Turkey, and you're chewing on and gnawing on something. You're just going to shake your head, and pretty soon it just flies off your fork, hoping no one saw it. When you could have been at Wilderness Ridge having that incredible Thanksgiving Day spread, that gobble till you wobble. Don't forget also, go see Shuey and the gang Black Friday for savings on golf with your friends at Wilderness Ridge, wildernessridgegolf.com. Shuey, we've talked a lot here. We talked some Nebraska guys doing well in the world of professional golf. We've kind of gotten into your mindset and how you were a grinder this time of year, and also how it's great to step back during the holiday season and kind of recharge your batteries. We got into Oklahoma, Nebraska football. Keith Jackson making many cry. The all red game in 86. So you're. I want to get into football here for a second, and tell me the boys are going to win on Friday.
Oh, no doubt.
They're going to get it handled.
Yeah, they're winning. No question.
Okay, so that's Mike Shewhart. Nebraska beats Iowa.
You got to hear first.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, I mean, I agree. In pin.
Yeah. Write it down.
I think so too. I think they're going to go out there and play their butts off.
I think they're going to play the best game of the year.
Amen.
Yeah.
Save the best for last.
Best for last.
There you go. So when it came to grinding and getting repped, and is that how you would kind of stack and stagger your practices? How would you rotate it with? Would you focus most on what you needed most improvement with, or would you rotate it? How did you go about attacking to be a better pro?
Some of that is you concentrate a little bit on what your weakness is, so to speak. And it changes all the time. You know, man, some weeks you putt it really good, you chip it really good, you hit it really good. So it's like, but you don't do one of the other aspects. So it's like you maybe spend a little more time that week getting that aspect of what it is that you didn't do well the week before, basically back up. And, you know, I, again, was a pretty much of a grinder from sun up to sun down. So I kind of worked on everything for lengthy periods of time.
How many hours you put in a day?
Man, it would be 10.
It'd be 10-hour day at practice?
Oh, at least. That'd be a short day.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you play minimum of 18?
So most of the time I tried to play. I'm a big play guy because you learn a lot from playing, you know. You have to practice and learn and refine some of your skills and some of the things you do, and you practice some of the things you do, but you still got to be able to implement those things. And the only way you can implement those is on the golf course because you can't simulate it in practice like you can on the golf course. It's not the same. So I'm a big play guy. You have to put yourself in the situation that you're eventually going to be in so you can learn how to do it there, learn how to get comfortable with it out there. So when it is time and you are faced with it, when it really does count, you are, again, you're more comfortable, you're more aware, you're a little more confident in being able to do it when you absolutely have to do it. So, again, you can't do that when you practice, you know, so you have to play, put yourself in those situations.
Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf Segment, be by Wilderness Ridge for their Black Friday special. And can give them a shout, wildernessridgegolf.com, 402-434-5106. Throw a Hail Mary up about any availability left for that Thanksgiving Day spread tomorrow. Don't make the cooking a headache. Should we hang out for us? Brad Edwards coming up.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Well, it's too late to rescue you. The best wisdom that I can possibly give, wisdom I can possibly give on that subject, 9 days, and it's a little late. You should have come to me sooner. My wisdom would be you have to stay out of the way.
Mike Leach on marriage. More to come from that. Talk to the pirate today. Just on text, and he's also a pecan pie guy. I like that. Chris Schmidt and Colton Stone with you. Happy Thanksgiving. Great to be with you on Hail Varsity Radio. Mike Shewhart, Shuey, Husker Golf, Wilderness Ridge sitting in. Gary Barnett coming up in 25 minutes. His thoughts on Nebraska-Iowa. We welcome in College Football Insider, College Game Day, ESPN Radio, ESPN the Magazine, College Football Playoff. Brad Edwards with us. Brad, are you on your way to the grocery store? Do you have to mess with that? Are you set for tomorrow? How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm kind of surprised you asked that. You got some sort of mental telepathy or something, Chris. Because I'm about to leave the office. I just got through doing a SportsCenter hit, and I am on my way to the grocery store to pick up a few things that we kind of forgot in the grand scheme of the Thanksgiving planning. So not going to buy the turkey. That one's taken care of, but just few of the extras.
You're a brave man, my friend, going at this hour to the grocery store the night before. Some of us in high school worked in grocery, and it was, man, we needed a face mask and mouthpiece if someone forgot the green bean or the fried onion top or the pecan. So good for you, and I'm sure you have a strategy worked out.
Yeah, I don't want to put my wife in the position of having to battle that, so I'll suck it up and I'll do the job.
Brad Edwards with us. Brad, so let's talk coaching carousel for a second, and let's start with Chip Kelly. If you're a betting man here, what do you think ends up happening? And I know it'll probably be Sunday or after for Chip to maybe make his call, but how do you see this thing shaking out? Florida, UCLA, A&M, what's your gut tell you on Chip?
Well, I saw a report from, I believe it's from our Mark Schlabaugh.
Sure, yeah.
Who said that Chip was down to those two, mm-hmm. Florida and UCLA, and he did not expect him to entertain any other offers. So it was either going to be one of those two or just stay out of coaching for another year. My feeling before any of the openings, were public, was that Chip is just more of a West Coast guy, mm-hmm. and I mean he's from New Hampshire. Let's clear that up. He's not from either region in terms of being born and raised, but obviously he spent a lot of his coaching career on the West Coast, and I always felt like he would be more comfortable there. Mm-hmm. And then I think when you start to compare these two jobs, UCLA just seems like the better fit for him, because I remember covering him at Oregon. While he was always very cordial with the media, you could tell he was one of those guys that didn't love having to do all the media stuff the way that some coaches do. And so I think that the attention is not something that he relishes.
Right.
And being in L.A. where you don't have to bother with all these different fans and groups always wanting a piece of you and everyone recognizing you if you try to go out in public, I think that would be nice for him to be in a spot where he can go do whatever he wants and doesn't have to worry about getting stopped all the time. All of that said, I saw another report today that said that UCLA's new deal with Under Armour could be a big deal for Chip Kelly because of his relationship with Phil Knight and Nike. Now, I don't completely understand why that's a deal breaker. It's not like he personally has a contract with Nike, as far as I'm aware. But apparently it is something that is under consideration and would have to be worked out for him to go to UCLA. So who knows? End of the day, I think there are pros and cons on both sides. I'm still leaning UCLA, but I'm certainly not going to be surprised if he ends up at Florida either.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Brad, a thought here on the offense working in SEC country. You know the SEC extremely well. And let's go a step further. Chip Kelly's offense that Frost is using at Central Florida and how it could work in the Big Ten. Do you have any reservations about it being as successful as explosive in different venues, taking that Chip Kelly offense from the Pac-12 to the SEC and taking that Central Florida, Chip Kelly, Oregon type offense from where Frost is at and applying it into the Big Ten?
I don't, because scheme is only part of it. I mean, it's obviously a very good scheme, and even though a lot of the principles of it are being used by more and more teams, so it's not novel, mm-hmm. where you could catch teams off guard who just weren't used to seeing those types of things. He had a lot of success, I think, because of that early. But there's more to it than just that. There's the play calling. Having a play caller who knows the right order to call the plays,
sure.
When to do this, when to do that, that's obviously as big of a deal as the scheme itself, and a good play caller is going to be able to have success against good defenses. And then even beyond that is personnel. And at Oregon, he always had great personnel at the skill positions. Offensive line was okay. And then I would even go to the other side of the ball. While it's not his area, the defense, he had very few great defensive players at Oregon. He had some. I mean, some guys that went to the NFL. But I guess what he really didn't have was depth. He didn't have a lot of quality depth most of the time on defense. And whether he goes to Florida or UCLA, he'll still get those skill position guys. I think he can get better defensive players, and that's going to help because he's not necessarily going to have to score 40 to win games. And so I think it'll work either place because he will have talent. And as long as you're at least as talented as the opponent, then superior coaching is usually going to prevail.
Brad Edwards with us. Brad, let's talk college football playoff for a minute. And you look at Miami jumping up to 2. What's your reaction to the Canes right now? And also spend a thought here on the Iron Bowl. You know Alabama, you know Auburn both really well. And take me through who you think wins that one. Miami, and can they keep doing what they're doing? I know not this weekend, but beyond. They have Clemson looming, and then Alabama, Auburn for sure. That thing's going to be a heavyweight fight.
Yeah, so the rankings last night surprised me. I actually thought if there was any movement in the top five, it was going to be Miami falling a spot.
Sure.
Now, I think the right thing to do was to not penalize Miami for coming out flat in a position where a whole lot of people were predicting them to come out flat, which is off those back-to-back emotional night games against ranked teams. They played really, really well in both of them. And it was natural to say, okay, you know what, they're not going to come out with their fastball. And they didn't against Virginia. Fell down 14-0, tied it at 14. But then they fell down 14 again at the start of the second half. And while, yes, they pretty much dominated the rest of the game and ended up winning by 16, I don't think that you can say that you think Miami's better because of that. I think you can write it off as kind of a neutral result because it was pretty much what you would expect. The committee made it sound like they were more impressed with Miami for having done that, which was kind of a head scratcher to me. But you know, when I look at Miami, I see that, you know, they had a scare in the second half against a mediocre Virginia team, and I put that in a pool with every game they've played this year outside of the other two that I mentioned, which is, you know, outside of the Virginia Tech and Notre Dame wins. The other eight are not that impressive. And so, I mean, at a certain point, is your real team the one that you had in those two games, or is it the one you had in the other eight? A lot of people would say the body of work of the eight speaks louder. And so I'm still, like, for me, jury's out on Miami. And here's the bottom line. Their two best performances of the season came at home, at night, in front of their crowd, which was a big factor. And when they go to Charlotte for the ACC championship game, that's going to be a road game. Charlotte is a short drive from Clemson, and that thing is going to be packed with Clemson fans. And like I said, it's going to be a road environment for Miami, and they're going to have to play even better than they did against Notre Dame in order to win that game. And it's going to be a little out of character for them, too, because outside of the Duke game, they really have not played well on the road so far this year. So that's kind of my take on Miami. They deserve to be in the top four, obviously, but I'm still not sold that they're the best team in the ACC. As for the Iron Bowl, a week ago, I would have told you that I expect Auburn to win. And while I'm still picking Auburn, I'm not as solid on it as I was, just because last weekend against Louisiana Monroe, while that's similar to the Miami game, it was a natural letdown coming off the big win over Georgia and all that. But it was more just seeing Auburn look like they looked in the first month of the season, seeing them look like they looked in the second half against LSU. It just reminded me that Alabama is still the better team. And Auburn, in order to win, is going to need to play, not only play extremely well, but they're going to need to play clean like they did against Georgia. No turnovers, very few penalties. If they can do that, then I think that they can win this game. Alabama, however, is so good that if you make mistakes and you give them anything easy, it's going to be really tough to beat them. And that's kind of where I am. I feel like it's a toss-up game, even though I'm leaning Auburn at this point, and obviously the implications are huge in terms of the playoff.
Has Wisconsin done much to grow on you at all?
Yeah, a little. I mean, I'll say this. We're at a point now where, because of the Notre Dame loss and the Pac-12 being out of it, I think it's pretty much accepted that if Wisconsin wins out, they're in. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we were asking the question, would they necessarily get in?
Right.
Or would they absolutely get in if they're undefeated? Now, I think they are. And if they beat Ohio State, I'm not going to have a problem with them getting in. I'm still not sure they're one of the four best teams, but I'm also not sure that that's really what the committee ever gives us anyway. So I'm okay with Wisconsin. I love their defense. I'm still not sold on their quarterback, and that's what, you know, when you don't have a bunch of future NFL guys and your quarterback is not great, it's hard for me to buy into you as a top four team. But I don't think they're that far away. So yeah, they've grown on me, but I'm still not expecting them to win the Big Ten.
See, and I don't blame you at all for that, because I mean their system and their defense is really good. Their O-line's incredible. Their running back's a freshman and he's tremendous. And Hornibrook looked like, I mean, I would have yanked him, and they stuck with him, and he made some great throws against a one-dimensional Michigan team where the defense has got to carry that whole team. We'll see how they match up and stack up against Ohio State. And I know Ohio State's not awesome. They're really good.
Well, which Ohio State team are you going to get?
Exactly.
The one we've got in the last 2 weeks, I mean, I can see a scenario where Wisconsin struggles to cross midfield against Ohio State.
Could.
But then the Ohio State that showed up in Iowa City, they could lose to Wisconsin.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And that's kind of what we're talking about this week here between Nebraska and Iowa. I mean, does Nebraska kind of rally the troops for Coach Riley here, or does Iowa snap out of this funk post-Ohio State? How many teams put up 55 on Urban? None, first of all. But how many teams do that and then just absolutely tank the following 2 weeks?
Right.
They had
absolutely zero offense against Wisconsin, and then not much against Purdue. And then even, I'm just off the top of my head, going back, you know, a week or two before the Ohio State game, they weren't scoring very much. And so, actually, I looked at this earlier today in our metrics. You know, we have rankings for offensive and defensive efficiency. Ohio State allowed 55 points. Now, granted, 7 of it was on a pick six, so only 48 to the offense. Allowed 48 points to an Iowa offense that ranks 68th in the nation in offensive efficiency. And when I say offensive efficiency, that's adjusted for opponent quality. So my disclaimer here is it's very difficult for a Power 5 team to be ranked beyond 65. That's how many Power 5 teams there are.
Right.
So if you're not in the top 65 and you're in the Power 5, you're not good. And then Ohio State also, in the same season, they were held to 16 points at home by the nation's 64th ranked defense in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I mean, one of those is a complete aberration, but two of them, what is going on here? And that's why so many people nationally are fired up about this possibility that Ohio State could still get in the playoff. How realistic it is, I think, depends on how some of these other results play out. But I'll say this, just like Purdue last week, Nebraska can have a say in this, because every extra loss that Iowa takes, what happened against Ohio State looks even worse for the Buckeyes. And if Iowa was a 6-6 team, I mean, that's something the committee has never had to deal with, is a playoff candidate getting rolled by 31 by a 6-6 team. We've seen some teams lose close games to mediocre opponents, but not get rolled by one. And so Nebraska can they can maybe hurt the Big Ten's cause by winning this game.
We'll see how it shakes out. It'll be an interesting atmosphere Friday. Brad, enjoy Thanksgiving with family and friends. Thanks so much for a few minutes today. We'll run you down next week for conference championship weekend and any news that comes out of Lincoln, obviously, here within the next few weeks. Take care and get that mouthpiece ready for the supermarket, bud.
I'll do it. Happy Thanksgiving to you and everyone listening.
Awesome, man. Take care. There he is. Brad Edwards with us, ESPN Insider College Game Day, SEC Insider. And you'll hear him on Saturdays with Game Day getting ready and his thoughts there. Yeah. For Iowa to put up the point total they did, Brad put it perfectly. It's not good. And they didn't put up the points, Ohio State, that is, against one of the worst Power 5 defenses in Oklahoma. And they got rocked by one of the worst Power 5 offenses. Ouch. Guy who started Black Friday, Gary Barnett, up next.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Big thanks to Brad Edwards. Don't forget Black Friday. We are at Miller Time Pub. inside the Cornhusker Marriott Hotel. And that'll be a 10 to noon show. We welcome in former coach at Colorado and Northwestern. He started Black Friday. Yeah, 0-1. Gary Barnett's with us. Coach, how are you? Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, Chris. Thanks very much. Hope you guys get that good weather that you're hoping for.
Oh, it's going to be 60. It's going to be phenomenal. Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be not your weather, but, you know, it'll be fine. I got to ask you before we get into some football thoughts, if you had one item to punt on Thanksgiving, what would it be? Cranberry sauce, stuffing, green bean casserole, pecan pie.
Oh, cranberry sauce.
Yeah,
it's out of there. You got to make it harder.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The last one I would punt.
Okay, fine. Let's flip it around. Is the cranberry still the last one you'd punt?
No, it'd be the first one I'd punt.
Okay.
But you know, what's the one I just couldn't live without?
Okay.
How about that one?
Okay, well,
pecan pie.
Good. You're a good man. I know that. I get outvoted, so I don't get pecan pie unless it's grandma and grandpa. If we're hosting, I'm hosed on that thing. So, hey, great weekend of college football. We'll get to it. And a lot of thoughts here as Nebraska gets ready for Iowa, coach, and Mike Riley and his future at Nebraska, and whether Iowa and Nebraska is his last game as a head coach, whether he retires. That's just kind of what the story has been. But I wanted to get your thoughts on just offensive style here that is going on with Scott Frost and the Big Ten. You know the Big Ten and that Chip Kelly style of offense. I talked to Brad Edwards about it. I want your take. Do you have any concerns about kind of that tempo spread succeeding in the Big Ten?
No, I really don't. I think it would be one of those, if it comes to Nebraska, it's going to be one of those changes that most people fight. I mean, you're not going to have the big offensive lineman. It's mostly quickness and that sort of thing. But there's absolutely no reason why it can't succeed in the Big Ten. I base that on just the fact that I think football's changed the last 10 years. I personally, when we got there, we're doing much of that, not the up-tempo stuff, but the sort of the crazy throw it all over the place stuff.
Sure.
I decided I couldn't win at Northwestern doing it that way, and so I had to change. So whether or not whether that still holds true or that's still the issue, I'm not sure. But I don't see any reason why it can't if you've got the players to run it. But you have to have the players to run it. It's like anything. You've got to have players.
What about getting those types of players to Nebraska? Is it a scoff at, no, it can still happen, or no, it's going to be more difficult? Do you think it could work?
Your recruiting issues are recruiting issues no matter what your offense is.
Okay.
And if you're going to throw it, then if you're going to throw it and that's going to be what you want, then you're going to go recruit guys that can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had trouble getting them here to another offense, then you'll have trouble getting them there for this offense. It's more of a big problem than it is an offense or defensive mm-hmm. issue.
Gary Barnett's with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Coach, when it comes to rivalries, we've been talking this week about, you know, Nebraska-Iowa. Is it a rivalry? I think it's growing towards one. I think many folks still miss Oklahoma-Nebraska, and they miss Colorado-Nebraska. And how did you approach the rivalry build-up and game? I mean, you got to stay even keel and focused and hope the same high-performing team shows up each week. But how did you deal with that with players getting ready for Nebraska, Colorado, getting ready for Iowa, Northwestern? What was your message to kids?
Well, once it's in there, once the rivalry has been established, then you really don't have to say anything because everybody else says something. It's the only thing that's on the radio or on TV or when you're going to class or when you're getting groceries or getting gas. Someone's going to say something to you about it because your fan base just sort of takes it over and assumes it. So you really don't have to do much of a coach as a coach. I mean, if I ever thought I had to get somebody ready to play Nebraska, I got the wrong guys. So it was Now, when we first started, when Mac first started it, you know, everybody thought he was out of his mind, and really for the first 4 years or 5 years, even after we won in '86, I think we were always looked at as a little dog biting at the heels of Nebraska, and that they could easily just kick us away. But we didn't go away. You know, we just stayed there and stayed there and stayed there until it became somewhat, at least in that part of the country, a rivalry. So the minute your kids, when you recruit a young person to come there, he's aware of that rivalry. And Nebraska may be in that situation where they're still trying to establish that sort of mentality with Iowa. Mm-hmm. But it's really such a logical one for you guys. I mean, you border each other. You know, it's very similar in so many ways, communities, football, tradition. I mean, it does seem like a natural. Maybe it won't ever be as bitter. Not bitter, but as...
You can go bitter. You can go bitter.
As high, I don't want to use bitter. It may not be as extensive as the Colorado side of it got, because I don't know whether Mike or any Bo or Kirk has gone out of their way to talk about it to the extremes that Mac did. I mean, when you stop letting red appear on campus and you can't, you know, nobody can wear red and wives can't wear red to the games and you can't have a red car and you can't, you know, I mean, it was, I saw Mac make one of our coaches take his car back because it was red.
Are you serious?
Oh, I am absolutely serious. Dealer car, you could not take a red dealer car. And none of the wives were ever allowed to wear red around the building, to a game. I mean, I don't care who we're playing. You couldn't wear red. So, I mean, he was obsessed with it. But you know what? It took. You know, so it took, and everybody eventually would say, they would warn you. If somebody wore red into a, if a new a recruit wore red, I'm telling you, first thing that would happen is the whoever was hosting would get him a different shirt. So it was,
you ever play a trick on a guy, send him in to see Matt wearing red?
Well, yeah, occasionally every once in a while you'd laugh when you'd see somebody in a red shirt going in to see Mac. you want to be a little fly on the wall and hear that conversation. But, yeah, it was that intense at Colorado.
Gary Barnett's with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Coach, a thought here on how the team will – likely rally around Mike Riley, and a thought from you on how Mike Riley will treat Friday.
Mike Riley will be as professional and as humble and as down to earth as he is about every other day of his life. He'll be as caring. He'll the whole day will only be about the players and trying to win the game. Now, have you got enough players, and can they play at a high enough level to beat Iowa? You know, the guys in Vegas don't think so.
No.
But you know, you never know what's in their hearts, and it just takes a couple breaks. I mean, you could have you don't want to catch the Iowa that played Ohio State.
You know, I don't know that Iowa exists.
Well, it did one day.
No, I know.
You know, you want to catch the Iowa that played Northwestern. So, I mean, you just never know. But it's one more opportunity to go play. The guys who love the game are going to play as hard as they can play. The guys who are waiting for the season to get over, they're going to give you that kind of effort, and it's going to be on both sides. You know, the other team's going to go to a bowl. The other team's, you know, they've got another game. There is no other game for Nebraska.
Coach, a thought here on – got about 2 minutes here, and we'll play rapid fire to try and squeeze it in. What do you think Chip Kelly does? What's your reaction to him in UCLA, him in Florida?
You know, I don't know Chip all that well. Although he always comes up and says hi when I'm at a game, so this is purely a guess and speculation. I know he can easily find those players that he likes in his offense in California. They're all over the place. I'd say the biggest issue for Chip is examining whether or not he can get them in school at UCLA. UCLA is the second hardest school in the Pac-12 to get into,
wow.
Stanford being number one. And so whether that is a deterrent for him, I don't know. And I don't think they're going to bend on this deal. So his chances for the for more of the kind of players that he's going to want might be better at Florida. You know, and plus he's going into a league that does some of that, and they're doing more of it than they used to do. But it's a defensive league for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Ohio State, Michigan, who you got? Minus 12 Buckeyes.
I'm going with the Buckeyes. I was just back there last week and saw them just tear apart Illinois, and they're pretty good in just about every position. So I like the Buckeyes.
Iron Bowl, Bama, Auburn.
I'm going to go with Auburn.
Really?
I'm going on a limb there. Yeah, I'm going to go with Auburn. It's there. Auburn's playing pretty well. Bama's got six guys out, may have six guys out. They might get the safety back. But, you know, I just think it's that time, and this would be the venue for it to happen.
Clemson, any upset alert at South Carolina?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. But that's always a good game, though. That's fun to watch.
Wazoo at Washington. Pirates underdog by 10.
Yeah, I know that. I think that's a lot. The one thing they have now is that they can play defense,
mm-hmm.
but so can the other team. And I'm going to go with Washington on that.
Okay. Nebraska and Iowa, I think Iowa's 4.5.
Yeah, it started off 3.5, but you might be right, 4.5. That's going to be that's a hard game for me to pick on your radio show. So, you know, but unless something drastic happens and there's turnovers at Iowa, Iowa should win this game.
I think Iowa's a pretty good football team.
I do too.
I mean, they beat Ohio State, could have beat Penn State.
Yep.
Beat Iowa State this year. They've gone on vacation too many times. Coach, happy Thanksgiving to you. We'll run you down for championship weekend next week, but best to you and your family. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Chris. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You too. Take care, bud. Okay. Coach Gary Barnett. I mean, I thought that was all urban legend. You can't have a red car in Boulder. No? Coach Mack would make you take it back to the dealership. Wonder if that meant players, too. Come on. That was fun. That was funny. It's a joke. Jock Doc on the way.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert. Happy Thanksgiving, Dr. Brandon. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, buddy. Happy Thanksgiving to you guys.
So it's you know, pretty soon, the hockey season lasts 17 months, NBA 15 months, not quite, you know, an extended period in that same peer group as baseball, but pretty soon it'll be spring training and, well, Aaron Judge and them Yankees will have a new manager and the rookie of the year will try and end up with the MVP. He has just had surgery. This kind of blows me away. Dr. Brandon, I didn't know anything about Aaron Judge having some work done.
Yeah, me neither. That was kind of a shocker as I was looking up a couple of the injury reports today. It said that he had surgery actually yesterday, and I didn't even know he had a problem with his shoulder. I guess I haven't read that closely on the injuries for him, but he sure didn't look like it the way he played this year.
Well, just think how many more bombs he would have hit, right?
That's right. Maybe that's what his little post-All-Star slump was all about.
Yeah, maybe so. So let's talk Aaron Judge. Let's talk Yankee pride and rookie of the year. Dr. Brandon, what happened and what's been done with Aaron Judge and that left shoulder?
You know, so pretty brief description of what they did. Essentially, the description that's out there is had a shoulder scope where they went in and cleaned up some cartilage. Sounds like he maybe had some loose fragments. They call them loose bodies or loose fragments within the joint that they cleaned out. Yes, we can kind of speculate a little bit about what that is. They didn't make any mention about any labral fixation or any rotator cuff fixation or any rotator cuff pathology either. So, you know, you think about a guy like him, all the training he's doing, you know, the reps in the batter's box, and this was on the left, which would be the non-throwing side, but all the reps you're thinking he's doing both in the weight room and the hitting cages, obviously that shoulder sees an incredible amount of just kind of volume of force and reps going through it. You know, what can happen over time here is you can get some small tears in the labrum. Maybe they just didn't describe it well enough. Perhaps maybe he had some small tearing in the labrum they just had to clean up. I suspect that he probably has some areas of maybe some wear and tear on his cartilage. If you remember the cartilage, that really kind of smooth stuff that's on the ends of your bones, that allows them to kind of glide back and forth against one another within the joint, such as the shoulder. What can happen is you kind of get maybe even into some early phases of some arthritis. You get a little bit of cracking in that cartilage. Little pieces of that can kind of break off. Traumatic type of things can result in, you know, pieces of that cartilage breaking off as well. And then those kind of float around inside the shoulder. And if you kind of think about, you know, little pieces of gravel or something getting stuck in a joint, that's kind of what it's like. These little pieces of cartilage catch in your joint. It can be painful. The joint can feel like it pops or maybe even catches or even locks up. That's probably what he was experiencing. Also, where they clean up some of the cartilage, some of those pieces are kind of starting to peel away a little bit. Portions of those may still be attached, and so those pieces kind of flip over on themselves. That, again, can create some kind of mechanical symptoms. And that's probably what they were addressing with him.
Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Aaron Judge and his work on that left shoulder. What's your reaction to this? Is this kind of price of doing business? A guy who's played at the high level of college, spent time in the minors, now really his first full season with the Yanks at age 25. Is there enough wear and tear on that non-throwing, that non-dominant shoulder for him to warrant this type of work? Is this a common injury for his age and where he's at in his career, or is it a little bit excessive and early with knowing how few miles he has on his body in the majors, that is?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, you know, one to definitely, you know, speculate on. I would say from a, you know, something being common, it's not that very common. You have to go out and, you know, clean up the shoulder. You know, very common, obviously, when you think about, you know, just a generic knee scope, go and clean up some cartilage, clean up some loose debris within the knee. That is a very common procedure, especially in high-level athletes, like professional baseball players, professional football players. Not so much on the shoulder side. You know, it's just such a different joint. It's, you know, really a non-weight-bearing type of joint. And so we don't see this that often. You know, does it happen? Sure. You know, some of the reason why athletes kind of end up in this situation is, you know, MRIs of the shoulder are helpful, but they're not always perfect. In fact, sometimes we'll call them MR lies because they'll miss stuff. And so I think for some athletes, they kind of end up in the situation where the shoulder hurts, they've done a bunch of rehab, just don't seem like they're getting better. It's the end of the season. Maybe they shoot an MRI, and you look at the MRI and you say, you know, there's a few things here that look a little bit concerning. You know, maybe there's a little bit of tearing on the labrum, at least that the MRI shows. So maybe there were some findings on the MRI that were concerning. And then they went and they scoped the shoulder, thinking that maybe they were going to have to fix the labrum or perhaps even work on the cuff. And then you get in there and it actually looks a lot better, except for, you know, you see some of these other things, loose cartilage and that kind of stuff. And so maybe that was the situation with him. You know, that is a fairly common thing to happen at that high level. You know, again, when you look at these athletes at that level, they're so in tune with their bodies, and things get out of whack just a little bit, and you start asking questions, and is there, you know, truly something structural that maybe we're missing, you know, because obviously they're getting hit with amazing physical therapy almost immediately when they have, you know, some type of injury. So if they're not getting better, that's kind of that next step for him. And so that's probably how he got himself in the situation. Pretty young in his career, you know, to be going down this pathway, especially in the shoulder. Again, fortunately, he's, you know, not a pitcher or a catcher, and so, and it's not his throwing arm, and so from a hitting perspective, I don't know if this really impacted that much from a hitting perspective.
How does something like this happen? I mean, is it, I know there's wear and tear that can happen. I'm just going through my mind here when I watch him or remember him swinging. You know, you step forward and you let it fly with that right to left swing. And where can this, maybe it's just hereditary. I don't know. What's your take on that?
You know, I bet someone on the way, there's probably at least a traumatic component to this along the way. You take a guy like him who's just such a phenomenal athlete. he's probably played multiple sports. There's probably a point along the way where I bet he maybe had a little bit of instability in his shoulder would be my guess. Maybe it didn't completely dislocate, but maybe kind of slipped out of place just a little bit. Also, what's really interesting about athletes at that level, more so kind of on the pitching side, you know, to generate the kind of velocity, say, a pitcher needs to throw it at that level, or even for that matter, to swing a bat with the kind of bat speed that swing like he has, you really do have to have some kind of extra elasticity, probably a little bit of looseness in your joints to be able to do that or generate that kind of velocity. And so for him, he probably always kind of walks that fine line of being, you know, just loose enough to generate that velocity, but maybe a little bit too loose, so you kind of slip out of place a little bit. So maybe he was kind of battling that some. And having that little kind of extra instability definitely puts a lot of extra stress on your cartilage within your joint. And so things like that, that kind of chronic repetitive kind of micro trauma to your shoulder can lead to those kind of things where you kind of start to chip off or fray a little bit bits of cartilage. And maybe that's how he ended up in that situation, which, you know, wouldn't surprise me with the amazing athlete that he is.
Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Aaron Judge and his shoulder surgery, a little cleanup job. Dr. Brandon, best wishes to you and your great family, and a happy Thanksgiving to you and the Lincoln Orthopedic family. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Hey, thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. You guys take care.
Good stuff. And Aaron Judge, at least that's not a throwing shoulder. We've saved the best for last when it comes to Mike Leach and advice on marriage. Maybe you've seen this, but you'll want to hear it again. And I should have taken notes on this almost 14 years ago. We'll wind down a Wednesday next.
Friday, sunshine, breezy, and 67. That's your Capital City forecast on ESPN, FM 101.5 and 1480 AM, Lincoln's Sports Authority.
You know us. We know sports. We're ESPN 1480, KLMS, Lincoln's Sports Authority.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
What a good time today. Hope you're blessed and we'll have lots of fun and food and entertainment and enjoyment with family tomorrow. Are from us to you, happy Thanksgiving to all. Thanks so much for spending time with Hail Varsity Radio. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone, Mike Shuhart. Shuey's hanging out. Awesome stuff from Gary Barnett and Brad Edwards and Brandon Vogel. And Shuey was talking some golf with this. So it'll be awesome. Without further ado, the pirate Mike Leach got loose on marriage and the advice for it. And when we get to closer to Christmas time, we talked to Coach Leach last year, and he kind of, you know, dropped the bomb about Santa. So we'll re-air that for you. But here's Leach on marriage, and we broke this thing up. It's about 4 minutes, and he is just, again, a college football treasure.
Well, it's too late to rescue you. The best wisdom that I can possibly give, wisdom I can possibly give on that subject, 9 days, and it's a little late. You should have come to me sooner. My wisdom would be you have to stay out of the way.
Okay, so you got to stay out of the way. More from Coach Leach. And if you have a holiday wedding, God love you.
No, yeah, and I wish you a very happy marriage, and I'm sure you'll have one. But I'm just telling you, when it comes to marriages, the women lose their mind. Your fiance is going to lose her mind. Your mother-in-law is going to lose her mind. Your mom is going to lose her mind. Several of your sisters and female relatives are going to lose their mind, and they're going to barrage you with constant questions.
So, how do you handle them questions?
what should we wear? And then, which, of course, my answer was, I don't care. And then, what color should the invitations be? I don't care. What should we have for dessert? I don't care. Should we seat this way or that way? I don't care. But see, I don't care is not satisfactory at all. And you're going to get caught in a catch-22, and I'm certain that you already have. And that catch-22 is, well, I want you to be a part of this, too.
Yeah, you got to be a part of it. Catch-22, more from the pirate.
So what color invitations? All right, the blue ones. Well, I kind of like the tan ones. Okay, the tan ones then. Oh, you're just saying that because you want this over with. You're not even thinking about it, which is, of course, true. What do you want for dessert? I was thinking of strawberry shortcake. Oh, okay. Yeah, strawberry shortcake would be good. Well, what about the blueberry pie? Well, I like the blueberry pie. We could have the blueberry pie. Well, I thought you said you wanted the strawberry shortcake. And it's just going to go back and forth, and they're going to play keep away from you until after you're married. So what you need to do is you need to work late hours.
We have time to finish this out. All right.
Work late, be very nice and supportive, but they're going to play keep away from you, and there's no answer you can give that is going to be satisfactory or correct. If you successfully please a few of them, the others will still be, oh, well, I just don't feel like he's that interested. Yeah, okay, so you need to work late, go in the back room and read a lot of books. You have to go take the groomsmen out, so you make sure that they march in just right, and they know exactly, you know, these swell outfits that you picked out or whatever, however you're doing it. And in the end, you'll wish you eloped.
Black Friday, 10 to noon. Be there. Miller Time, probably want to see you. Get ready for Nebraska, Iowa. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks so much.